Dobrodošli u Roze Koze podcast. I ove srijede s vama su Bela, umjetnica i grafička dizajnerica, i Mija, video editor. Naše teme vezane su uz osobni razvoj i self-care. Enjoy!
Bok, Mija.
Bok!
Kako si danas?
Super sam. Ne, u stvari nisam. Sva sam natečena. Ne znam, nešto sam se probudila jako natečeno. Ali dobro sam jer ćemo danas se razgovarati na engleskom. Znaš da ja volim prakticirati svoj English i kringlish.
Da, ti voliš svoj engleski, ja svoj ne, pa ću ja više biti ovdje u svojstvu prevoditelja. Ako naravno naš gost neće toliko na široko pričati da ću ja već zaboraviti onu prvu rečenicu koju je rekao, onda vjerojatno će ostati na engleskom kak je izgovorio. Ali ajmo mi to sve vidjeti i ajmo mi njega prvo predstaviti.
Da, da ti predstavi naše gosta.
Danas ćemo malo pričati o disanju i o tehnikama disanja. Sa nama je Tom, koji je inače, budem ja to sve i na engleskom, koji je inače evo yoga učitelj, skoro sam rekla teacher, i coach, i evo svakodnevno prakticira Missouri Steel. I ono što ću ja njega na početku bih htjela pitati, to je, iako me već Bela... Da, iako me već Bela, Mija bila kao, pa kak ne znaš kaj to je, pa to ti je ono jedan ono kad sam sebe nešto, ali ja bi ipak htjela da on to nama sve predstavi, pa ajmo mi krenut. Tom, hello, welcome to our podcast.
Hvala, thank you.
This is probably the longest intro we ever had.
Ja se ispričavam. Okay, so Tom, you are... a passionate yoga teacher and coach, healthy living enthusiast, and et cetera, et cetera. So you practice a daily Ashtanga Missouri program. Can you mm-hmm. tell us what kind of program is that? And what is Missouri?
Mysore.
Isn't that some city in India?
Exactly.
I prepare good.
Yeah, you prepared very well. Okay, so the style of Ashtanga yoga is traditionally practiced, or this vinyasa style, Ashtanga vinyasa mm-hmm. style, is traditionally practiced in a guided self-practice setting, which essentially means it's not like a typical yoga class that you would imagine, where the teacher stands in front and says, okay, now lift your hands, now do this. But instead, everybody knows their practice, everybody practices the same sequence and gets individual attention. That's the guided part of self-practice. So everybody is doing their self-practice with their own breathing, with their own rhythm, with their own speed. And the teacher is just there to hold the space and to give assistance, to maybe give advice here and there, to but also to give like this individualized approach, like, you know, stopping the practitioner saying, okay, here you do this, and instead of doing this movement like this, you can maybe do it like this, or somebody has a pain with certain movements, and then we can individually see what might be a wrong alignment or a way of doing it that could be improved. And so I find it the best approach to learn, because you're forced to face yourself, right? If you're listening and just kind of, okay, lift my hand, okay, I can do that, fold forward, I can do that. You don't have to do it yourself. I mean, you're doing it, but it's like you're just following orders. And you can go for 10 years in a lat class, and then somebody asks you do a sun salute by yourself or do some practice by yourself, and you have no idea what to do, because you never actually stop to say, okay, what am I actually doing? And so yeah, it's the best approach, also because after you have memorized the movement, then you can actually, like, then your body starts remembering, and then you can start paying attention to the details that otherwise you wouldn't be able
exactly.
to do.
This is the reason why I fell in love with the Ashtanga yoga. First of all, I think it's perfect for control freaks like me, because you don't listen to the teacher. Okay, now a three pose. Now we're going to do a pose of a child, whatever. I don't like that. I like to know what am I going to do next. And after
like 2 years, my body is doing the movements and I'm able to focus more on deepening my breath. And yeah, I still don't do this like mula bandhas and stuff. I'm not able to focus on every part of my body in every position, especially due to my surgery in between, and I had to stop practicing for more than half a year. So I can't wait to come to Mysore class. You're going to have, let me just tell you, you're going to have a lot of adjustments to do. I know how to do positions, but my body doesn't. I know it here, but my body is like, no, you're not going to twist that much. It's not going to happen today. Yeah.
Okay, I can't translate everything.
Just forget about translation.
Mogu samo malu, samo evo, na kratko ću samo rezime napraviti. Znači, to je vrsta individualnog pristupa u grupi. Evo, da to tako sumiram. Znači, jesam dobro rekla, jel?
Yes.
Eto, znači, svako radi svoje onim tempom kojim može raditi u stvari. Evo, to je to. A onda teacher dođe do njega, malo ga ispravi, malo mu pomogne, i to je to, što je za mene, evo, i najbolji, ja mislim, način, jer sam uvijek pod pritiskom šta ako nešto dobro ne napravim. Tako da, evo ga, možemo dalje.
Tako je, ići ćemo zajedno kod Toma. We're coming together to one of your classes. That's a promise.
Very good. Great. Yeah, I'm expecting you now.
Okay.
No pressure.
No pressure, but you have to come.
Well, I actually wanted to most talk about breathwork. Recently, you had an amazing course. You were so kind to give free for one whole week for all of us who wanted to learn more. And I wanted to know, when did you start getting into that? Why? What were your reasons? Because you said you are from the like more scientific and technical background, right? So it wasn't you weren't born, let's say, yogi and like a practitioner of meditation. You weren't born into that kind of family. So what happened? Where was the switch?
Okay, well, if you post a question like this, I'm not even sure where to start. My brothers, I have two brothers, and they are older than me, 10 years and 9 years older. So I was lucky to have my parents as a guides, of course. Everybody's parents are guides in a good or bad way. And my brothers as a second guides that gave me like a second opinion that was still mature, you know. And so I consider them my mentors. And interestingly, they are both also yoga teachers.
And
I was the last hope of my parents to you know, do something normal with my life. And they're both teachers, like normal school teachers. So they actually encouraged us, you know, why don't you become a teacher? Because it's supposedly a safe job, you know, state job that you can do the rest of your life and you have a safe income. So, yeah, we all became teachers, but not in the way that my parents, I guess, imagined. And yeah, at the beginning, I mean, you know, as my wife likes to put it, I'm, you know, German and September born, so like the opposite of a wild, creative person. I like my structure, and, you know, I grew up in Germany. I went to normal high school and then to university. I studied economics and engineering, so I always loved to kind of dive deep into different subjects and understand them from a rational point of view, and of course, you know, lots of mathematics involved with economics and engineering. And then I actually started working as a management consultant. So again, very ratio driven and structured. And but I also started practicing Ashtanga yoga already while I was studying. So I was lucky enough that my brother introduced me to Ashtanga yoga, and I always from the beginning loved the dynamics. The dynamic way of meditation, right? Because you, through the movement, can calm your breath and then your mind.
Me too, yeah. That's what I love about it. And it's heavy physically, right? So also, it's a kind of manly yoga, I would almost say. You know,
you could say so, yeah. But yeah, and that's the tricky thing. Like, it's the sneaky thing of Ashtanga yoga. Like, it gets you maybe through the physicality. A lot of Westerners, I assume, started practicing because it has this challenging part to it. I wouldn't call it heavy, but you know, it's very challenging.
I don't know. I'm still on half primary after 2 years, you know.
Okay, yeah. But yeah.
It's, for some of us, it's quite challenging.
Yeah.
Physically, in strength and in flexibility. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it gives you this balanced practice because you are, in a way, forced, you know. I don't want to say forced like that. I mean, you don't have to do anything, but our Western mind likes the linear approach of, okay, you master one asana, one posture, and then you move on to the next, and you get a more advanced one and a more advanced one. There's always that next step that keeps you driving forward. But at the same time, because of its utilization of the breath and because of the daily approach of practicing daily and doing the same thing every day, you also get very quickly results. Like, oh my God, I'm only practicing for a week and I can already do this. This seemed impossible a week ago. And then after one month, oh my God, I can already do this. And, you know, I'm only practicing for 4 weeks. But at the same time, no matter if you are where you are in the practice, there's always like, oh my God, there's so much more that I can still learn. So much more strength, so much more opening of the body. And so, yeah.
And meditative part as well, just to flow through it.
Yeah, but that's what I wanted to say. It kind of has a sneaky way of getting that to you. So me as a, you know, 20-year-old or 20-something-year-old German rational-minded person, I didn't care about mantras. I was even like, oh yeah, like don't bring me any mantra, any, you know, mantra singing, any, even breath seemed like something like, okay, I gotta breathe while doing it, but I like the physicality. But then, because you're doing the movements and you do open, you know, your chest and you release tension around your heart and around your stomach, like all those places where we usually hold on to something, where we squeeze up to not allow certain emotions to come up, you kind of let go of layers one by one, and it kind of like you open up mentally, emotionally, without even noticing. Like when you already when you have opened up, it's already too late to say no, in a way. And so even though I was not going into the practice for that reason, I, you know, grew in so many ways, spiritual, emotionally, mentally, etc. And yeah, that's what I love about the practice, that it gets you without somebody having to say, okay, now you have to open up emotionally, now you have to do this and that, right? Like, ask a man to open up emotionally, they will probably like say, what do you want from
no
me,
thank
right?
you
but give them a practice that where that happens as a side product, as a side effect, then you have them, you know. And then yeah, and that's what I also love in teaching that approach, because you see that happening in front of you. Like, you don't even have to do much, you just have to hold the space and kind of allow people to start trusting their body, trust whatever comes up, breathe into it, stay present with it, and yeah, the rest will happen miraculously.
Indeed it does. And so the breath work, how did you start doing more of that? Was that
right.
also through practice of the Ashtanga? You wanted to deepen the asanas, or was something else entirely?
Yeah, at the beginning, I was, you know, very religiously practicing the physical practice, and which is supposed to be a breathwork practice in itself, right? Just with moving. And I remember the first time I was in India, I asked the teacher after you know, my month there, like, do you have any suggestion what I should do? And he was just like, breathe more, like, focus more on the breath, because I was kind of forcing myself through it. Like, the whole practice happened, but it was very like clockwork, dang, 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 you know, just executing the movements without feeling them. And so, of course, I followed the advice. I started breathing a little more. I started focusing more on that. I was lucky enough to meet teachers who were practicing and teaching Ashtanga, but also were deeply involved in pranayama and the breathwork practice of the yogis, and immediately kind of pushed me in that direction, like, hey, you should start breathing. And so I was lucky enough to get into the practice of pranayama, which luckily my teacher also introduced to me in the similar way than Ashtanga, meaning, this is your practice, do it every day, And then after a couple of months, okay, now we adjust. Now you do this. And again, every day. So it followed the same step-by-step approach, which gave me results. And I found that the breathwork opened up my practice, like my physical practice, and opened up my body in ways that were subtle, but much more powerful than pushing more in certain postures might ever have gotten me. It's like the postures got easier, I got stronger, I got more connected in my whole body without pushing harder, which I guess was my initial approach. Like, you know, you want to get something done physically, you have to push harder and harder and harder, exercise stronger to get a result. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, I have to surrender more, I have to create more space through the breath, I have to calm the nervous system more through the breath, and all of a sudden the postures become more easy. And so it was a similar love at first sight that I immediately started doing it. And then after my son was born, more and more I had to focus on, or had to, but wanted to focus more on, like, what are the practices that give me the biggest result for the minimum amount of time that I invest, right? Because when your son is small, when you have a baby, right, you sleep less, you want to support your wife as much as possible.
And also to stay calm as much as you can.
You want to stay calm, yes. And so if you have a, let's say, advanced physical practice, you do notice that a certain amount of practice every day gives you energy, and a certain amount of more practice or a certain exercise routine or asana routine might actually drain you a little bit because it's so so taxing on the body. Right. And so I kind of dialed back my physical practice and focused more on the breathing practice. And interestingly, again, I didn't lose anything. I gained actually ability in physical practice as well, even though I was now focusing on my breathing. And then from that, I actually started, because up until this point, I was very much focused on studying pranayama, meaning the yogic science of breathing, which is based, of course, on old texts and on the tradition of and lineage of teachers passing on these practices. And then I started studying with some Western teachers who were actually, who were focused a lot on what does Western science research have shown about breathing and how powerful it can be to reduce symptoms, to heal the body, to affect the nervous system. And interestingly, of course, the same things that they found were also the things that the yogis were teaching, just using different terminology. And so kind of it was a nice full circle for me, coming from a Western background and scientific background, and then diving deep into the practice, the yogic practice, the Eastern approach, gaining the experience and kind of feeling, okay, if I do this on a daily basis, that's how I feel, meaning I felt what the effect is. And then reading and learning and studying about the Western research and having it black on white, like, okay, it's actually
like a
physiological reason.
It's really like a full circle. That is beautiful. But I wanted to ask, what I love the most, what you said was during your course, how you don't do much of cardio. You do the Ashtanga yoga and you do some physical exercises, more, I guess, calisthenics, I would assume. So let's say you don't do much cardio, but just with breathing exercises, you are now able to run the flight of stairs much without losing a breath. So because during the Eddie Stern course, which we attended together, I remember, back then I had a heavy anemia, but I remember my friend was here and I was like, oh, let me show you the upper town. And when we came up those stairs, I was like, oh my God, I can't breathe. And then he told me, yeah, but you're only practicing the Ashtanga, and that's not for the condition. That's not to feel to feel more. You need to do more cardio. And I was like, but I'm already doing this. This is already hard for me. So just I would like you to explain more the, you know, CO2 levels and how it works, what's the like science behind it, how can you what do you do, how is the breathing that you do in order to gain more more condition basically?
Well, first of all, in the way that I teach, it's two things. One is a breathwork practice. So, you know, it's you sitting down and doing some kind of breathwork. That could be, you know, like lots of people do Wim Hof. They sit down and they do two, three rounds of Wim Hof breathing. That kind of thing. You sit down.
But that
and
can get you lightheaded easily.
Yeah. We can talk about that in a moment. But just to make the point, like there's a breathwork practice where you actually sit down and you work with your breath. And then you have your 10 to, for most people, close to 20, 25,000 breaths a day that you take, whether you want to or not, right? Like right now, when we're sitting here, when, you know, you're listening to me now and you're breathing, maybe 5 to 10 to 15 breaths a minute. And that sums up to, you know, 10 to 25,000 breaths per day. And a lot of us, we overbreathe throughout the day. So my first approach usually is to guide people into getting that awareness and slow down the breathing, make them breathe through the nose diaphragmatically with an open posture, because of course the moment we release the heart down, like this rounded spine posture, you know, the looking at your phone posture, we immediately constrict the upper belly, and you're laughing.
Yeah.
Because she does that all the time.
Yeah.
I need to look at our phones myself. Like this from
We all do that. Yeah,
we do. So changing that awareness and well, putting the awareness there and actually, okay, I can sit up tall. I can breathe through with my diaphragm through my nose throughout the day. And then, of course, there are some ways to also affect the way you breathe throughout the night. And so that's a big lever we have to actually affect our health, because it's similar to when you eat crappy food. Let's say you go to eat junk food every day. It's not going to kill you the first
like
day.
Like Mia this weekend.
Or the first year, right?
Right. I eat very lean and healthy. I eat awesome. I eat very lean, but I went to the Museum of Chocolate and maybe I was like exaggerating with those spoons, you know. They allow you to fill your spoon unlimited amount of times. Maybe it was a few times too.
Yeah. Then.
Well, I mean, the question is, how do you feel after, you know? If you feel good after, then it was an enjoyable moment.
No, exactly. I felt super bad yesterday. I think that's why I'm so swollen today. I'm so horrible. I need to stick to my good diet. It really does a difference, especially because I'm doing intermittent fasting of 19 hours. And I notice when I eat good, I feel amazing. Next day, I do the Ashtanga yoga after like 17 hours into not eating. It's perfect because, you know, you can bend and you don't feel any sickness or any nausea. It's awesome. Yeah, it just eating healthy is important. Let's just stop at that.
But my point was here, if you eat crappy food for a weekend or for even a year, you might feel bad depending on your age and depending on how your body can deal with it, but it's not going to create big problems. Most probably. But if you do that for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, you actually might get a chronic disease. Yeah. And with the breathing, it's more subtle, but it will actually affect you as well. If you breathe your 20,000 breaths a day, and if you're constantly overbreathing and you're constantly breathing with a tensed upper belly and breathing into your upper chest instead of your belly and breathing through the mouth, again, it will not have an effect within a day, but if you do that over many years because of constant stress and so on, then it's actually possible that you get some diseases from breathing badly, like high blood pressure or stuff like that. And so if you reverse that, it's the same is true. So if you have any condition that you don't like, and you start breathing with more awareness and start adapting those breathing patterns, you might actually release your symptoms or maybe even move a lot, big steps towards healing. And because they, for example, also did these studies where they were with animal studies, but they could actually, by if they did this, I think, in the 1950s or 1940s, this study where they actually intubated dogs with so that they could affect their breathing. They could make them breathe faster or slower. Mm-hmm. And by making them breathe faster than they would have to breathe based on just standing there, immediately the oxygen that was delivered to all the vital organs went down. They started having high blood pressure, a higher pulse rate, and that could even lead to organ failure by making them breathe really fast.
Yeah, makes sense.
And the moment they lowered down the breathing rate, their all the symptom, the body functions came back to normal. But if they went just 10% above what was metabolically needed, they also had this, you know, 10% too high blood pressure, 10% too high heart rate, etc. And so you can, the breath is just amazing because it's free, it's available to everybody, and you can immediately access it at any point if you have that awareness. And so
it can help with panic attacks, right, as well. I remember you were saying that if you learn how to recognize your patterns and you can regulate your breathing, you can even stop yourself from getting into the direction of a panic attack.
Yes, there was this study where they took people that experience panic attacks out of nowhere, meaning, you know, they live their life and all of a sudden they're getting the panic attack. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't see it coming in that sense. And they hooked them up with some measurement devices where they checked carbon dioxide saturation in the blood and or levels in the blood and heart rate and so on, breathing rate. And then they stopped, just lived their life with those measurement devices. And when they checked the data just before getting a panic attack, an hour before, they were significantly increasing their breathing rate and lowering their carbon dioxide levels in the body. And so my point here was that if those people would have a higher awareness about how they are breathing and how the breathing then affects their state, then most probably they would notice, okay, I'm breathing a little faster, let me calm myself down. Just without that awareness, then you just run into the panic attack or, you know, the fatigue or whatever it might be.
So is there any instant technique we can use in such situation like panic attack, you know, right away, on like 5 deep breaths or something like that, you know, for calming down?
In general, what I teach people is to put a open posture. I have this 6 principles of conscious breathing.
Okay, please tell us.
Let's do it, Bella.
Okay.
I'm already.
The first one is sitting up tall, you know, with your shoulders broadening away from the spine and your heart lifted, relaxing the belly.
Okay.
Pushing the back of your head a little backwards, so it creates a long neck, and so you're not extending the neck, but the neck stays long and you push the head back, right?
Okay.
So I'm not really looking at you anymore.
All of a sudden, your head is out of the screen. Okay. That's how tall you sit all of a sudden. Very nice.
Okay.
Right? With a subtle smile on the lips, barely visible to the outside, relaxing the tongue onto the upper palate behind the upper teeth, maybe blinking with your eyes a couple of times, relaxing the jaw. Right, because if you bite the jaw, that creates stress instantly. And make sure your shoulders can move, your fingers can move. And again, just relaxing the belly. So that's the kind of joyous posture, as I like to call it. Then principle 2 is breathe diaphragmatically. So make sure that your chest is not doing any movement, but you're simply breathing into your belly, into the upper belly, and exhale, let the air out by itself, passively. Okay? Again, subtle smile, inhale into your belly, feeling the diaphragm move, and exhale out. And you can even, you know, put one hand on the upper belly just to have a physical feeling when you actually breathe into the belly. So the hand is kind of getting expansion from the belly. And important is that the exhalation is passive. then soften the belly. You can even really make sure that the belly is completely soft by kind of poking a little bit into it, seeing if there's any tension in the belly. And, you know, most of us carry a lot of tension in the belly. It's like what we have been...
Because we are taught to squeeze our belly muscles, so our belly mm-hmm. wouldn't be floppy and out.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Nobody yeah. likes the obelisk look. I mean, obelisk.
Yeah, it's also one of the things that I love to teach people. Like, look at your belly, let it hang out, and like lovingly look at your belly. You know, because it goes really a long way if you can just allow yourself to let the belly be soft.
Wow.
Because any muscle that you cannot relax is as useless as any muscle that you cannot engage, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But during the practice, when you practice the Ashtanga, do you also let the belly out in all the asanas? Or shouldn't you squeeze it in
no.
fact?
No?
Yeah.
No squeezing.
You're supposed to let it...
Okay, let's do this.
I'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
Let me get through the six principles.
Okay.
Yeah.
And okay, so we're breathing into the belly. We're having this open posture. And then we breathe only through the nose. And you can close your eyes for a moment. Let the air out of the nose. And then focus on your nostrils as you breathe in through the nose. And exhale out of your nose. And again, in through your nose, feel the nostril. And exhale out through the nose. Okay. Now shift your focus onto your throat. And next time you exhale, it's like whispering an M. Like M. And inhale in the same way. And again. I don't know if you can hear that through the microphone, but So now it's the same thing, but we focus more on the throat. And you will maybe notice how you can breathe much deeper if the focus is not in the nostrils, but here. And again, the exhalation is passive. Wow. The inhalation is active. Just active in the sense that the diaphragm lowers down and the belly expands, and you exhale at the out. So that's principle three, right? Open posture, diaphragmatic breathing into the upper belly, breathing through the nose. Those are the first three principles. And you can even go one step lower. So now don't think of your throat to create that sound, but instead just think of your pelvic floor and kind of expand it as you inhale, still breathing in through the nose. Into your upper belly and exhale, let the out passively. Inhale, expand your pelvic floor and your belly. Exhale. And do you feel how that makes it even more subtle? The breath still comes in through the nose into the upper belly, but it's much more subtle, much less, much more effortless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then we add principle four, which is a rhythmic breathing. For most cases, exhale a little longer than the inhale. So we might inhale for three, inhale one, two, and three, and then exhale, let the air out slowly. Again, inhale for three, one, two, and three, and then exhale, one, two, three, and four. Inhale, one, two, three. Exhale, one, two, three, and four. Okay? Because the exhalation will release the heart rate, will release the blood pressure, will relax the body, will give the body the idea of it's okay to relax, and the inhalation will activate slightly. So by exhaling just a little longer than the inhalation, we can reduce the stress level.
Wow.
And now
you feel all relaxed now.
No, yeah.
I know.
Okay. Great. I'm glad. And now wait for principle five, because principle five and also principle six, it's slow and small or minimal, right? So principle five is slow and principle six is small or minimal. Minimal for whatever we are doing right now. And so the easiest approach to do that is simply by pausing after the exhale.
Mm.
Okay, so you're still breathing in the same way, right? You're finishing your exhalation, soft belly. And now you inhale, one, two, three. Exhale, one, two, three, four. And pause for a moment, just to relax the belly, relax. Inhale again, one, two, three. Exhale passively, two, three, and four. Wait, and just relax. Inhale, one, two, three. Exhale, one, two, three, four, and wait. Once more, inhale, one, two, three. Exhale, one, two, three, four. Again, wait, and wait until you feel a slight appetite for inhalation. And if you feel it, again, with control, one, two, three, exhale, one, two, three, four. Wait, no squeezing, all is relaxed, and wait for that natural inclination in your upper belly to inhale. And then just do it by yourself. And as you wait, relax the belly. Let it out.
Wow. Yes, you're trans.
Wow, yes. Yes, I am.
This reminds me a lot of boxed breathing. You know, like one, two, three, four. Then you wait four. Then you exhale four. Then you wait four. I forgot what are the benefits of it, but I know I was doing it for a while. I liked 6-4 breathing. It was cool, but box breathing, this reminds me the most of that. And it really, the poses really help somehow. I you know more about that, so you say why. But I just know that physically they do. They make you feel good.
It's definitely true. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I watched your guided breathworks and meditation session, and you are always smiling. Why is that? Is that sort of ways you help ourselves to stay positive, or why we need to smile when we do that?
Well, first of all, there's no need to smile, right?
Because okay,
if you have a need, again, you're putting force on it. Like, okay, I gotta smile, and then you get this kind of American way of, you know, just
but you know what I mean,
Joker.
I remember when I was in America, I attended high school there for a year, like as an exchange student, and you know, it was this like high school yearbook picture smile, like
okay,
you know, like kind of fake and just like I always love to smile, and there's various places in the body that affect our nervous state, okay? And the pelvic floor is one, the diaphragm is another one. Essentially, all the places that are subconsciously controlled by our stress level. So, for example, you get into a stressful place, you know, you have a fight with someone, you get to work, you know, you get a bad email from your boss, whatever it might be.
Okay.
And, you know, you immediately squeeze the belly, you breathe a little faster, you bite your jaw, you kind of focus your pupils. And so if we know those places, we can consciously create the opposite effect. So by relaxing the pelvic floor, by relaxing the diaphragm and breathing calmly, exhaling a little longer maybe, by maybe even humming or, you know, singing, because our voice also starts squeezing and gets higher pitched when we get stressed, by releasing the jaw down and forward, by placing the tongue on the upper palate, by swallowing, because also, you know, swallowing is kind of something you don't do when you're stressed, and by blinking the eyes.
Really?
You immediately kind of create this, you're practically telling different places in the body that are like, that pick up information. Like, okay, supposedly I can relax. Like the brain says like, okay, I can relax because the guy is blinking, the guy is swallowing, the guy is breathing calmly, relaxing the belly. Obviously, there's no danger out there. Right?
Yeah, no, and it doesn't need to put you in a fight or flight. Yeah, there is a lot about it. Also, the putting smile on your face, you can't really feel super sad. I mean, I've tried. I can. I actually am a phenomenon. I can have the worst day ever and put like a Joker smile and I'm still feeling rotten inside. But it does help. I will admit it does help to try to relax. Brain different things.
Yeah. I guess it's also about the you create a space and then you fill it, right? With something. So when you exhale and then you wait, you can follow a technique like 4-4-4-4, right? Like the box breathing. Mm-hmm. But you might be doing box breathing and you're still squeezing your belly in all four phases. I can inhale in my chest for four. I can squeeze myself during the inhalation hold. I can squeeze the breath out and then hold with squeezed belly for four again, right? And I can also, exhale, intentionally pause, relax the belly, put a subtle smile, and just look within. And it's not about, okay, I force myself to smile just to be happy. Like, hopefully the happiness will come. But instead, okay, can I, with a subtle smile, that's why I always like to say subtle smile, barely visible to the outside, because it's not about grinning. It's about that like when you look at something, like imagine, I have a son that is 6 years old. If he's sad, I'm not going to grin at him and say, hey, life is happy. You should just smile. But I can put myself, in this kind of open, joyous position. I feel with him. I'm empathetic. But I can have that subtle smile that is barely visible with an open, open eyes, relaxed eyes, and say, okay, what do you feel? Like, what is alive right now? And then he might be sad, he might be angry, he might be whatever. And I can feel that in that moment through my empathy, but I can still keep that kind of holding the space with the subtle smile, if that makes any sense.
He does.
And then I will feel the sadness, but I might even feel it actually viscerally passing through me, but not in a, okay, you feel sad. You shouldn't feel sad, because the sun is shining. Or in a, oh my God, I'm so sorry that you feel so sad. What can we just do about it? Like this kind of.
Without the need to fix it, basically.
Exactly,
just to hold the
exactly.
space.
Yeah. And that's
hard. It's hard. Most of us, we grew up thinking we need to fix things. We are fixers and learning how to just hold a space for another and not have the your own need to fix it. That's a whole other story. That's a really lesson that I think everybody should try to learn.
Totally. But it starts with yourself, right? Can you feel triggered by something? Somebody does something that you don't like. Okay, and then can you just breathe in for three, out for four? Or it could also be in for four, in out for five. I'm not telling you this is the this is the right ratio, right? We like to have like this is the ratio that will fix your panic attack or will fix whatever. And those techniques are great if people just do them. Like, okay, that's what I got to do. It's good. It helps them. But it's not the technique. It's the way you do it, the quality of doing it. And so when you can just watch within, because you will not be able to hold the space for someone if you cannot hold the space for your own sadness or your own anger, and then watch it transform.
That's a nice tip for parents and situation like this with kids, of course.
Actually anybody, right? I mean, it's just that usually with kids we have a stronger need to actually fix ourselves, to grow, to not get mad anymore. If you're just by ourselves, it's, you're just hurting ourselves. It's not so bad.
Mia, Mija, samo da ti nešto šapnem, da Tom ne čuje. Hoćemo ga natjerati da nam pokaže kako ide ono sa trbuhom. Znaš da, da se opustimo. Ajde, aha. Ajmo ga. Ajmo
ali ti znaš da on malo razumije hrvatski, dugo je tu.
Razumijem sve.
A zato sam ja šaptala. Zato sam šaptala.
Okej.
So, Tom.
Yeah.
Bella would like you naked. I'm sorry.
Very subtle, very subtle. Yeah, I mean, let me introduce that whole topic because we were actually of just course, talking sorry. About technique, right? And the technique, often when you know, breathwork is a big thing now. I mean, at least for much more people than. Like I guess what diet used to be 20 years ago, now breath becomes.
That's right.
Becoming. And you can go on YouTube and find any breathwork practice and somebody will sit there and do something. Like for example, there's this yogic technique where you pump the air, right? Like
I
saw that. Yeah.
And so if
that's
you go on
difficult for me.
Well, yeah, but my point here is you go on YouTube, you see someone do it, they will usually wear a t-shirt, and then it's like, and you have no idea what they're actually doing. You can just see that they are somehow hyperventilating and exhaling through the nose, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's a belly. It's about the belly.
But actually, there's a difference in how can you actually control, mm-hmm. like what part of your belly is doing it, and based on what part of your belly is doing it, it might have a completely different effect, even though your face looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
And so in yoga, there's those, they're called kriyas, and they are kind of tension releasing techniques that are there exactly for that, to release tension from the nose, from the face, from the throat, from the tongue, from the chest, from the ribs, from the belly, from the pelvic floor. Uh-huh. And one that looks kind of like a cool party trick is Nauli, which is the churning of the belly. Mm-hmm. And actually what it is it's a diaphragmatic stretch. The diaphragm sits here, right? And just like any muscle, when it engages, it pulls down, it creates the inhalation. When it relaxes, you exhale. And if you have a diaphragm that is slightly tensed, it will be shorter, right? So just like imagine having your biceps too short, you would not be able to actually straighten the arm. Mm-hmm. And that would, of course, reduce your ability to move your arm a lot. Mm-hmm. And if your diaphragm is tensed, you might be able to diaphragmatically inhale like this and exhale. Mm-hmm. Inhale, exhale. While if it's fully relaxed, it might look like this. And now when you inhale diaphragmatically, you might have a much longer movement that is possible. So you can deepen your inhalation a lot without involving your chest and shoulders and so on. And so one way to stretch that is to, wait, let me, do you still hear me when I do that?
Yeah.
Okay. So the way I do it is I exhale fully and then I will mimic an inhalation without actually inhaling, and that will draw the diaphragm up. And it looks like this.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, wow. There's like, I want to learn that. Do
oh
you
my
have
God.
Classes for that?
I need.
I must learn this. I really
wow.
want. Like, I have.
I need
I have
to
a,
try this.
There's wow. no way. I have a ball there and I've tried. I do like these vacuum abs exercises every morning. So I do something similar. Like, I breathe in and I pull the belly in, but. Like, the ball just stands there. I don't know. Is it because of surgery? I don't know. Is it because I'm a woman? I don't know. Is it because I'm a 40-year-old woman? But it just stays there. Like, I've tried this. I saw you doing this on Instagram and I went in front of my mirror and I was like, oh my God, how does he do that? I gotta learn. That and the rolling of the tongue. That's like, those are two things I'm coming, not only for your tongue.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but it's essentially, again, you know, if you have lived your 20, 30, 40 years, whatever old you are, right, or young, you if you have never accessed any different parts of your body, like different parts of your belly, it's hard to engage them specifically. You can only maybe squeeze the whole belly or let go of the whole belly. And that's true for most people.
Yeah.
And actually, I like to also in my Ashtanga teaching, but also in my courses about breathing, we focus a lot on that because a lot of us are using exhalation muscles to create, to engage their core, to support their core when they do sports. And you can try that. If you actively exhale and then hold these muscles engaged and then try to inhale with these muscles squeezed, you cannot access your diaphragma. And but there's also postural muscles that will engage your core and will still keep your belly relaxed. And so there is ways in Ashtanga, for example, because you were asking before, where you can keep your core active, support the lower back, support, well, you know, maybe activate your rectus abdominis, your abs, you know, your six pack, without inhibiting your diaphragma to move. But this has to be learned.
That I'm sorry, but that totally sounds like science fiction to me, because, you know, I'm imagining myself in downward dog where you are supposed to squeeze. Well, I've taught you are supposed to squeeze those muscles right in and breathe. And I do the breathing. I do the squeezing. I feel my breath deepening with a more practice, of course, like this ocean breath. It goes deeper because I used to like power. Ashtanga was like, I would power through. I would have like five breaths. And every time I would attend the class, I would, even after practicing at home, I would have like muscle pain because you are much longer in a class with the teacher in those positions. And I was just at home, it was like, oh, five breaths, next asana. So I just don't know, like you're saying it's possible, but I don't know in my body, even your breath for class, I couldn't really follow completely. When you say like, put your sit bones down and back more straight, I think I need a private class, you know, my head cannot really follow the instructions alone.
Well, it's normal, right? I mean, obviously, sometimes I'm just showing these things to make a point, like to show, okay, this ideally is possible. But then it takes some time to even, you know, like just this practice. It might be at the beginning, nothing is moving. And then because you get the instruction and you get the detailed instruction, all of a sudden you feel something moving almost by chance, like, oh, okay, that just happened. I have no idea how. But then you repeatedly do it, and all of a sudden you can create a certain movement. And then you refine it and refine it and refine it. And it might take, you know, a year or two, but you will get there.
That fast. That's how long it took you to be able to do this? I thought it was like 10 years of practice.
No. I mean, just imagine how light a life can be if your belly can be relaxed, right? Like if you're not constantly holding on to things. Because of course, when we hold on to things in our body, we most probably also do that mentally and emotionally in our lives, right? So the more you can let go in your body and release this tension, the more your life also becomes more simple, easy. Okay, yeah, that can be, you know, I allow it to be. Can just be present with whatever's uncomfortable right now. And yeah, and the right breathing, now coming back to the one of the questions you asked like half an hour before, you asked about the CO2.
I love it that you remember. That's amazing. This is like, I'm sorry, you are a man. We're used to having men not remember things. So I think everybody should learn how to breathe like Tom, because
they remember things.
It definitely it betters your memory as well.
Well, it definitely does, yeah. So CO2 is a gas that is extremely important, actually. And of course, most of us learned in school, oxygen is great, we want it. carbon dioxide is this toxic thing that we just need to get rid of.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this. What actually makes you inhale? Like you, if you would stop breathing now after the exhalation and wait, mm-hmm. at a certain moment, you would feel this uncomfortable feeling like I should inhale in your mm-hmm. belly. Why is this feeling triggered in your body?
Your need for oxygen, that's probably wrong, right?
Yeah, that's the trick question. Yeah, most people will say, well, I need oxygen, so that's yeah. why I need.
Of course.
I get this feeling. But actually, it's carbon dioxide levels rising. So because all the cells in the body are constantly producing carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. Even if you're just sitting or sleeping, right? But if you're sitting, it will be a little bit of like a small rise in CO2. If you would be walking or even running, it would be much faster that CO2 gets produced mm-hmm. because you're using more energy mm-hmm. in any moment. And so your CO2 levels are rising, and the chemoreceptors in your blood vessels are picking that up and telling the brain, okay, level so and so is reached. Please tell the diaphragm to engage so you can inhale. Because the inhalation will then be followed by an exhalation, and that will release CO2. Mm-hmm. So, and depending on, like, let's imagine that you are consistently experiencing stress throughout the day. When you go to the office, when you get an email, when your boss walks into the room, when you are in traffic, driving home, picking up your kids, or whatever you're doing, whatever your life creates in terms of stress for you. So we are constantly getting this trigger, I'm getting stressed, my breathing starts going faster. Mm-hmm. Faster breathing will not lift your oxygen saturation in the blood, because your oxygen saturation for 99% of the people is already 97 to 99%. But it will constantly release CO2. So your body is getting used to lower levels of CO2 on average. And that means that when you exhale now, maybe after 10 seconds, your body will already say, we have reached a certain level of CO2, please inhale. While if I exhale and I just wait, I might be able to go for 1 minute until I feel that mild feeling that I should inhale, simply because my body is okay with higher CO2 levels. Now, if you're constantly breathing a little too fast in terms of your metabolic needs, you're constantly having low levels of CO2. What are some functions of CO2? It calms your muscles. It calms your nervous system. It allows oxygen to be released into the cells from your blood. With low levels of CO2, the oxygen saturation in the blood will be 97, 98, 99%. But it will not release into the cells. So you will actually have maybe your thyroid constantly getting a little too low amounts of oxygen, or your liver or your kidneys or whatever. And so you're constantly depriving your body of important oxygen, even though there's enough oxygen in your blood. And for example, epileptic seizures are actually treated are possible to be treated by breathing in air with 5% CO2. Normal would be under 1%, a lot under 1% of CO2 in the air. So that will immediately lift your CO2. You can stop your epileptic seizure. If you have migraines and with aura, there's actually devices that will make you re-inhale the exhaled air. So you immediately lift your CO2 levels, and that might help 60, 70, 80% of people preventing a migraine from happening if they do that quick enough.
So sleeping with a blanket over your head could actually help you against migraine, because...
No, but what might help is actually taping your mouth. Because
I'm a nose breather. I don't sleep
okay.
with a.
But if someone is actually breathing through the mouth through the night,
yeah, me.
They most likely will dehydrate, because actually you lose a lot mm-hmm. more
mm-hmm.
water.
Happens all the time.
Your nose will start getting smaller and smaller, meaning you actually will have a harder time breathing through your nose at a certain moment. Mm-hmm. So you can, but of course that also is reversible. And you will have, you will most likely overbreathe, meaning you will probably lower your CO2 levels. And for women, just to finish off my whole rant about CO2, it's even more important because during pregnancy, women naturally breathe faster because they have to breathe higher up because now they have all of a sudden the belly growing. So the diaphragm naturally has less space. Mm-hmm. And then after the birth, they usually are still full of stress because they have to now take care of the baby and sleep less and so on. And so their CO2 levels will most likely not recover to normal levels. And then additionally, throughout the menstrual cycle, I think between the 11th and 21st day, progesterone gets mm-hmm. higher. And that's progesterone is a breathing stimulant. So you will most likely breathe more and faster in those days, which are incidentally the days before you get your period, where lots of women experience symptoms like mm-hmm. stress, headaches, etc. And that might actually also be again related to fast breathing, which
you
wouldn't be
everything.
A problem.
I will tell you something incredible. So I was exactly on my PMS during your breathwork week, and uh-huh. I had no symptoms, just sitting with you every day. I had no symptoms. I had no normal nervousness. I had no pains, no nothing. What I do notice, because I like to, you know, experiment with my body, with different diets, with different practices. I always have my iWatch measure my heart rate. And I notice that, of course, during that period of PMS, I have resting heart rate much higher, which of mm-hmm. course, yeah, now that you said, it's connected with breathing. Although it's quite low, usually it gets higher those days. But for real, that 1 week with you was awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad that it works. I mean, obviously, now I'm also not talking from experience and can just kind of relate back experiences from maybe my students and from what I read, but I'm happy it actually works, yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
I'm in shock, yeah. Wow.
That's a good way of shock, though.
Yeah, that's right.
It is. This is incredible. So, like, to sum it up, what you should do to bring your CO2 levels up was take the longer pause at the end, like breathe mm-hmm. slower and try to prolong this pause on the end as much as you possibly can, and that really helps, like with getting better, like condition when you want to work out, when you want to run, when you want to walk up the stairs.
Yes, good point. Yeah, that's actually what I wanted to say. So first of all, let me correct that one word, like not as much as possible, because that will again trigger our like
smiling
performance yeah. mindset. Like, okay, how long can uh-huh. I hold my breath? You know, like. Not like that.
Yeah.
You want to, like I said, wait with curiosity until the next inhalation wants to come, instead of just inhaling because it's, you know, you just exhaled, so now you have to inhale.
Yeah, but it's been a minute.
Wait. Right? So you just find a new rhythm, and of course that rhythm will change when you walk somewhere, when you run somewhere, when you play, when you do yoga, you know, the rhythm might change. But in general, you always want to breathe minimally. Even in Ashtanga, when you breathe in for 3 or 4 seconds and exhale 4 seconds, the volume you can still minimize in a way that still feels good, like that you're not like feeling a lack of air, but not breathing more than you would normally do. So when let's take that example of you walking up to the upper town or walking up a flight of stairs, right? Mm-hmm. Like our yoga school is on the fifth floor, on the fourth floor, I think, depending on how you count. So let's say I run up there, right? I run up all the stairs. Why would I be out of breath afterwards?
Because you're out of shape.
Well, yeah, but like what triggers my breathing faster? It's my muscles can obviously walk up there. I mean, they're, you know, I mean, even for normally, for a normal person that is normal in shape, that doesn't do any training, if you walk up the stairs, you would assume that your quadriceps and your hamstrings and your calves can do that without running out of energy. So, but what happens is you walk up the stairs and your muscles start using a lot of energy, producing a lot of CO2. So all of a sudden you went from driving in your car to walking up the stairs, your muscles are working, the CO2 gets produced, and now your levels of CO2 rise very quickly. And if you're constantly overbreathing, meaning your body has a low normal level of CO2, all of a sudden you're shooting up with your CO2 over that normal level, and now your brain says, please, diaphragma, breathe quickly, quickly, quickly. We need to get rid of that CO2.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not your muscle that is the problem. It's your brain's assumption that now there's way too much CO2. So by lifting the normal level of CO2, by all of a sudden breathing those 10,000-15,000 breaths a day, calmer, less, you know, you naturally lift your CO2 level. Wow. Your brain will get adjusted to that, saying, okay, this new higher level is normal. And now you run up the stairs, your CO2 level jumps up, but it's still within a range that is acceptable. So your breathing can stay calm, or will just, you know, maybe be a little bit faster.
A little bit elevated. Yeah. Wow. That's incredible.
And so yeah, of course it could be because your muscles are deteriorated from not moving at all, you know, if you're a couch potato. But I would assume that for most people that get that age, you know, they are 20, they are 30, they are normally active, they get a little more couch potato like, they work a little more in the office, they work longer hours, they eat a little more junk food, etc., and they are constantly having stress, so they're breathing fast, the CO2 level, normal CO2 level lowers down, the brain adjusts, and now they are running out of shape just because of that, what I was just explaining.
Mm-hmm.
And then either they start practicing or they don't start practicing because they say, well, okay, it's just when I walk up the stairs. And so their CO2 levels keep getting worse and worse. And that's, they make less and less activity because it's just heavy. And that's when the muscles start deteriorating. And that's when you really are out of shape.
But so it's not aging, in fact. It's just the the fact old. That we are not building up our CO2.
Yeah.
Awesome. By the time I'm 50, I'm going to be fierce.
Yeah, exactly. No, you can really do it at any time, right? And I mean, my point is probably at some point we stop moving because we are out of shape, like in terms of CO2, and then the muscles actually follow along. Mm-hmm.
Follow, yeah.
But it's not that first moment. So that's why you don't really need cardio, because your heart can still work nicely. You need to adjust your breathing throughout the day, not just in those 5 minutes that you practice or 15 minutes.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, we extended all of our time. I would like you to tell us just about your coming workshop. And of course, for you to tell us, you are going to have a workshop in summer, right? You want advertising? You don't?
Yeah.
Because I just did.
Well, I do have regular Ashtanga classes in at Gaia Yoga in Zagreb, Monday, Wednesday, Friday right now. But maybe now that it's becoming spring, we'll maybe even add a day. Then I have a Ashtanga workshop on 28th of May, I think, in Gaia, in Zagreb. So, of course, people are welcome to join there. And I will have a breathing/movement retreat in Samobor, in a like small setting, you know, like intimate group, on the first weekend of July, 1st till 3rd of July, I think it is, Friday to Sunday. So, cool. Yeah. And of course, free stuff in my group on Facebook, Empower Yourselves Through Breathwork. Yeah, so if somebody's interested, of course, they can just join that group for free. I usually share lots of stuff.
I'm in.
I'm already there. I'm a member since the start. Give us your you know, all social media handles where you want people to follow you. We're going to also put it in the description, but just for people who are listening, it's better they hear.
Yeah, we'll send Tom Richter Yoga. I think it's in most cases. Like on Instagram, it's Tom Richter Yoga. I do have to, though, get a little more disciplined in actually posting stuff. I'm very lazy in that sense.
No, you're good. We see the belly moving. That's what we want. That's all we need.
Oh, great.
Thank you so much for joining us in our podcast today. We will learn so much. I feel we just scratched the surface. We could talk about this for days and days, but I had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Me too. Thank you both.
Tom. Thank you.
Thank you for the questions and your curiosity. And yeah, I'm just happy about talking about that topic, of course.
Bye, everyone. See you.
Bye.
Ciao.
I to je to za ovu srijedu. Ukoliko vam se svidjela ova epizoda, pa čak i ako nije, napišite nam komentar i osvrt, jer to nam pomaže u rastu i razvoju našeg podcasta. Za bilo kakva pitanja, tu smo u inboxu, a ako znate nekog kome bi se podcast svidio, slobodno podijelite. Sharing is caring.